Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to this edition of Inside Scoop Live. This is one of many features presented to you by Reader Views. I'm your host, Gail Campbell. Hello, and thank you for tuning in. Today I'm chatting with Dr. Jeff Hurton about his book, An Uncommon Drunk. But before we dive into his book, I'd like to tell you a little bit about him. He is a native Californian and resides in rural San Luis Obispo with his wife, Debbie. He practices dermatology and dermatopathology. He teaches. He volunteers at a laser tattoo removal clinic. He rides horses. And he shares the miracle of his sobriety with anyone who needs to hear his message. His past as a high-functioning alcoholic, his medical expertise, and his life experiences have uniquely equipped him to expose the many shocking physical, psychological, and social effects of alcohol. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Gail. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. Now, as we get underway here, usually I ask the authors to tell a little bit of the essence of their book, but in this case, I think you felt that that might be served best by reading the introduction to your book.
I think it would.
If you would, please.
Very well. Ethyl alcohol, a simple hydrocarbon, is the most addictive drug on the planet. Not because it is the most pharmacologically addictive, though it may be, but because it is the most accessible, macho, seductive, and legal drug available. Why is it so addictive? Because somewhere on the way to intoxication, there is a brief moment when we feel so good. It is a feeling of well-being, of no worries, produced by the dissolution of inhibitions that alcohol affects. It is by removing these inhibitions, these little anxieties that we tote, that alcohol works its magic. It is the feeling we seek when we've had a grueling day at the office and want to relax with a glass of wine. It is the emotionally at-ease state we desire when we enter a room full of intimidating people at a party and head directly for the bar. It is the invigoration we strive for when we are emotionally exhausted and need a boost. And it is the amusing, happy-go-lucky attitude that our friends enjoy in us after we've had that first beer. Unfortunately, that special feeling is fleeting. As we continue to drink, it disappears, and it is replaced by intoxication. Having experienced the feeling, we keep drinking, hoping that more alcohol will restore it. It doesn't. But we keep trying. And in the process, we develop a psychological and physical dependence, an addiction to this all-pervasive drug. Alcohol is the most destructive drug on the planet. It has killed more people, directly or indirectly, than anything else except war and plague. It is responsible for more human misery than any other drug, more homicides, spousal and child abuses, sexual assaults, traffic deaths, violent crimes, and diseases of abuse. Those whose first addiction is alcohol often also become habituated to methamphetamine, cocaine, heroin, and prescription painkillers. If alcohol were introduced today as a new product, its legal sales would be fought vigorously. But it's not new. It's been around since Eve picked a slightly fermented apple off the tree, fed it to Adam, and watched as he became giddy. Alcohol is so much a part of our society that it seems downright un-American to oppose it. What would a baseball game be without a beer? How can we eat a choice top sirloin without a good Cabernet? So we succumb to our history, to peer pressure, to effective media and marketing mind control, and we accept it, and we drink it, and slowly, insidiously, we become addicted. Alcohol morphs us into an unfamiliar character, a comedian who's the life of the party until he gets ridiculous and pathetic, a Romeo until he can't achieve an erection, a fearless superhero until he becomes aggressive and belligerent. I grew up thinking that every family in America celebrated happy hour. Dad would come home after work and drink two stiff highballs. And on New Year's Day, friends would gather around the television for the Rose Parade and drink screwdrivers and Bloody Marys. For special occasions, there were gin fizzes and rum punches. Every occasion was built around or served as an excuse for consuming varying and increasing amounts of alcohol. It took me 54 years to come to my senses, to see alcohol as the mind-altering, addictive, health-destroying substance that it is. What a revelation. So let me take you on my odyssey, which was the ever-narrowing maze of a deluded person who looked at life as a series of opportunities to celebrate anything and everything with a drink. Let me introduce you to some characters who shared my travels, but who fell victim to the effects of the drug long before I did. I will describe what it's like to die of alcohol poisoning in a one-night binge or from 30 years of hard drinking. You'll meet, among others, highly effective, successful, productive people who all have one terrible secret. They are drunk nearly every day, and they can't function without alcohol. These are the HFAs, the high-functioning alcoholics, and they comprise a large proportion of our society. Traditional wisdom alleges that 10% of men and 5% of women are hardcore alcoholics, the common drunks. Recent studies show that 30% of the U.S. population are, quote, binge drinkers, unquote, in that they get drunk at least once a month. There are no accurate statistics for high-functioning alcoholics because they are largely invisible in our culture, except to their spouses, children, and co-workers. They are very uncommon drunks, but they are drunks just the same. Allow me to present to you the scientific facts on the health hazards of alcohol, facts you've never heard or read before, facts the marketers of a multi-billion-dollar industry don't want you to know. For example, regular alcohol increases the risk of developing cancer, osteoporosis, birth defects, allergies, and infections. The alcohol industry has kept the truth from public awareness. Therefore, you may be shocked and amazed at your lack of information. But after reading this book, you will know the truth about alcohol. I need to tell this story because after more than 30 years, I'm free. Free from the uncontrollable need to drink. Free from the despair of waking up every morning and knowing that I had again lost the battle against this addiction. Free from the certain disaster that was waiting for me and is waiting for every alcoholic as the ever-tightening downward spiral sucks us into helpless, hopeless abandonment of dignity, reason, and sanity to a two-carbon poison called ethanol. If this narrative awakens a single person heading for the abyss, prevents one needless traffic death, one episode of spousal or child abuse, or one case of cancer, or restores the dignity and the humanity of a solitary soul, it will have served its purpose.
Wow, that is profound. And you know, there are some out there I know that are going to ask the question, well, what about the fact that medically people have been encouraged to add a glass of wine a night to their daily routine? Because it's supposedly medicinally healthy.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. So that the marketers of alcohol are very clever, and they somehow manage to get published on the front page all the positive things about alcohol.
Mm.
But the negative things about alcohol, if they're published at all, they're on the back page. For instance, the study that shows that wine drinking is good for your heart came from France. And it showed that people who drink red wine particularly have a lower death rate from heart disease than do the American population, which doesn't drink as much.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you look at the rest of that study, if you hear the rest of the story,
mm-hmm, as Paul Harvey would say,
that French population has a higher death rate from cancer and from suicide.
Hmm.
Now, that didn't get published, did it?
No, I don't think so.
I actually have patients who don't really care for alcohol but drink a glass of wine every day because they've been told that it's good for their heart.
Hmm. And so it may be good for the heart, but it certainly is causing destruction elsewhere in the body.
Well,
it?
Right, and there's a study from Mendocino County, north of us here in California, that shows as little as one glass of red wine a day increases the risk of breast cancer in a woman by 6 times the national average.
Oh, my. Wow. That is staggering.
And these are facts that nobody knows, Gail.
No. And your book contains a lot of these correct statistics, I gather.
There's a chapter called Alcohol and Your Health, The Great Hoax. And it basically describes all of the negative physical effects and medical effects of alcohol. And it's absolutely shocking.
Well, information that people need to be made aware of, absolutely. Now, Jeff, you know, most people, when they think of a drunk, they do. They think of the sloppy, falling down, dirty, grungy, homeless street person. That's the first thing that comes to most people's minds when they think of a drunk. And that a high-functioning drunk, there's a characterization and a definition that I think people need to hear. And even though you've touched on it, I'm going to ask you if you would to elaborate on that.
Sure. Well, this comprises a significant proportion of our population, Gail, and we've all seen these people. These are people who get a little bit excessively tipsy at a party, get a little loud, get a little bit raucous, sometimes they're a little rude. These are people who drink almost every day. They can't go very long without a drink. They may drink through their work day, but they certainly drink at night. And yet they function on an extremely high level.
Mm-hmm.
They may be presidents of corporations. They may be professors. They may be incredibly successful people. And yet they all have this one common thread, and that is that they are addicted to alcohol. Now, they haven't gone into the downward spiral where they end up on Skid Row, lose their job, are sleeping
lose
in the gutter.
Lose their families.
But they're right on the edge of that because they really are addicted. When I realized that I couldn't quit, it was like, whoa, because that's just one step away from being in that spiral when you start getting the shakes, you realize that if you don't have a drink before you go to bed at night, you're going to wake up in the middle of the night with shakes, and you're right on the edge of the hardcore alcoholism.
So this is the person that the moment they get home from the office and from the hassles of driving to get home, the very first thing they want is that first highball.
Right.
And then probably the second one before dinner.
Exactly. And they're drinking for the effect of alcohol. In other words, they're using it like a drug.
Mm-hmm.
The person that goes immediately into a wedding reception, they go right to the bar and they don't have one beer, they have two, because they want to get that little buzz. They want to get that thing started.
Mm-hmm. And even though they haven't, even though they're living well and engaged in relationships, doesn't mean that the quality of those relationships is what most of us would like to have, which is, you know, two-way, sharing, and a communicative.
Well, and only their really intimate friends and coworkers really know that truth, Gail. You know, see them get angry. My dad, when I was a kid, my dad would come home and have a couple highballs, and he got angry at dinner, and he'd usually pick on my sister. This is a pattern that is repeated all over the country, millions of times every night.
Wow. Well, exactly. So someone at the dinner table gets picked on.
Right.
And more times than not, it's the spouse. But you're right. As the kids begin to grow up and begin to individuate, then they become challenging, don't they?
Right. Well, I talked to a friend just the other day. His dad was a hardcore alcoholic, and his dad abused him every single night.
Oh,
and I don't mean physically, I mean emotionally and mentally.
Right.
You're worthless. What are you doing with your life? You know, your brothers are doctors and engineers, and you don't have a plan, blah, blah, blah. And how many casualties are there out there of alcohol? You know, I like to think of alcohol as like a hand grenade. It doesn't just damage the person that's drinking. It damages a whole group of people around it. Collateral damage,
I was just thinking of collateral damage, yes.
Yes.
And because it doesn't stop there.
No.
Once those kids get out on their own and begin to try to create lives for themselves, they carry the memories of that with them, and it plagues their own relationships.
Lifelong scars.
Exactly, lifelong scars.
And then what about the person that gets killed by the drunk driver?
Oh, and the families that are affected by all that.
Exactly. We have this mental set that people say, well, he was drinking. So that excuses his behavior?
No, it doesn't. It does not excuse it.
We had an episode here in our town just in the last month where a young boy, 5 years old, was killed. He was riding an ATV, a four-wheeler, with his dad. His dad was drunk.
Oh, my.
And he turned over the ATV and he killed his son.
Mm.
And 2 days later, the obituary in the paper said, for this young boy said, quote, he was doing what he loved best, unquote.
Oh, my.
And I was just absolutely shocked that
they would it just try to glamorize it like that.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, what do you mean he was doing? He was a passenger with a drunken driver on this ATV on this private ranch.
Every child wants to be in the loving arms of a parent, believing that they're going to be safe and protected.
Right.
So that part I can maybe embrace in terms of doing what he loved doing. He was in the arms of a father, but he didn't realize he was in the arms of someone who couldn't take care of him, who couldn't protect him.
Right.
And in fact,
but the fact that we acknowledge this. There's another case last year of a young man who was drunk. He was at a party and he leaned over a balcony on a second story, kind of in an inside courtyard,
mm-hmm.
and he fell to his death.
Mm. Mm.
And he was drunk. And so his parents had a memorial for him, and it was a drunken brawl. It was just, the parents are heavy drinkers, and there was no awareness. There was no the light doesn't go on and say, this kid was killed by alcohol.
Well, Jeff, now we're coming to an area here where whether it's alcohol or prescription drugs or controlled drugs, or not very well controlled drugs, whatever it is that causes us to change from being, or from at least having the possibility of being logical, clear-thinking human beings into sort of, I'm going to use a phrase called blithering idiots.
Right.
And a part of that is the denial that we are that's what we're doing. We're just, we and those around us, those that we have chosen to bring into our lives, to support this thing that we're doing, and all of us are choosing to stay in a state of denial about it.
Right.
So how can you, obviously there are programs out there, AA, Al-Anon, many wonderful programs, CODA, 12-step programs for drug addictions, for sex addictions, for all form of addictive behavior. And yet the first step is to come to terms with the fact that we're out of control.
Right.
We've lost control.
Exactly.
And our life is a mess.
And see, that's one of the purposes there of this book. There are enough scenarios in the chapters where hopefully a lot of people reading this book will recognize themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I have a chapter on the Christmas party where I have the prototypes of the people that are at the Christmas party. The lady that has too much to drink and dances with every man in the place in a very erotic way and
mm-hmm.
upsets all the wives, and you know that, and it's hopefully in some of these scenarios people will go, wow, that's me, or that's my wife.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
And so this book is for spouses. This book is for coworkers. This is for people who think they might have a problem, but they need, and they're honest enough to look at that. I've had people call me and say, wow, I read your book and I, on that, in that one section, that reminded me of me.
Mm-hmm. 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 Absolutely. And not just for adults, but for teenagers as well, who may be struggling and trying to figure out how to cope in a household where one or both parents are drinking excessively.
Right. Well, and the problem, this teenage thing, Gail, is it's the huge problem.
Please talk on that.
Well,
Jeff.
It's just unreal. When you look at statistics, 25% of alcoholics in this country are teenagers.
Wow.
And the amazing thing about that is fourfold. One is, leads to incredibly, like you said, blithering idiots, incredibly irresponsible behaviors directly linked to the increase in sexually transmitted diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Directly linked to unwanted pregnancies, directly linked to fetal alcohol syndrome, when these kids get pregnant when they're drunk and then they have a baby that's, that's got fetal alcohol syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Violence, drunk driving, and then the other thing that's amazing is they go on to more addictive behaviors like methamphetamine, like cocaine, and I work in this tattoo clinic where I take tattoos off of former gang members and people that have reformed their lives, and I have learned so much. And most of these people were methamphetamine, cocaine, heroin, prescription drug addicts. But every single one of them started with alcohol. And they continue to use alcohol during their hardcore addiction when they don't have enough money to score, you know, the cocaine or whatever. It isn't just the drug, it's the drug and alcohol. And so we don't really differentiate. Alcohol is a drug, period.
I know, at least in the past, in the recent past, there was the myth that, I may be a drug addict, but I can have a drink here, or I may be an alcoholic, but I can choose to use drugs instead.
Yeah.
And I won't be addicted to that.
Yeah.
It's like the addictive personality selects only one, and that's the one that you'll let go of, but you'll use something else to take its place.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because it is a behavior, and it generalizes into other drugs and other behaviors.
Mm-hmm. And now, Jeff, for all the horror that there is more than ample evidence to prove, there are also avenues leading to awareness and action. And would you take a few moments and just speak on those?
Well, now are you talking about recovery programs?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not a...
Any avenue that leads towards awareness and action, to change this or stop it.
I think there's two things to look at. One is the person, and the other is the significant others.
Mm-hmm.
There are huge problems in our culture with people who enable
mm-hmm.
alcoholics. And mm-hmm. by doing that, all we do is prolong the agony.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I mean, unbelievable stories. I have a senior couple that their daughter's an alcoholic, so they've set up a trust to make sure that after they die that she can continue to you know, live in their home and have enough money so that she... because they don't think she could ever change. And so they're going to enable her for the rest of her life.
Oh, wow.
With a trust fund.
And beyond death.
Right. And wives that stick with their man for years and years and years, not realizing that there have to be negative consequences to behaviors.
Well, that's right. The universe operates in a sort of a cause and effect, a balanced scenario. And that means that for every action, there is a reaction.
Right.
And if we protect people from experiencing the, as one minister in Austin, Texas puts it, if we protect people from experiencing the gift of the results and the consequences of their choices, we are not, we're really in the middle of God's work.
Exactly. So one arm of this awareness is the significant other and them saying, look, you have a problem and I'm not going to go away and ignore it as long as you have this problem, and keep that awareness in the forefront, and also create the negative consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the tough love. I'm not going to support that teenage alcoholic, you know, who is not going to school and not working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in hopes that he's going to reform, I'm going to let him find his bottom, if you will, so that he, you know, he can get some help. So that is one part of it, and I think that this book is really speaks a lot to those significant others, talks a lot about enabling, talks a lot about these behaviors. There's a whole chapter on, you know, is someone you love an alcoholic with a yes, no, and not the traditional questions or answers, Gail, like you've heard, you know, have you lost your job, you know, blah, blah,
right,
blah. You,
right,
but,
the low bottom.
But have you had a sexual failure? Do you drink... you know, do you lie about, you know, one of the things that alcohol does is it creates little dishonesties. You hide, you know, your six pack, or you have two six packs hidden, and we go into all that and bring out, you know, the little threads of dishonesty, of immorality, if you will, that are brought about by alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing is to raise the awareness of the significant other and to get them motivated to get involved and you know, to, if their spouse won't go to see a drug and alcohol counselor, they do. An intervention,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And then the other is for for these high-functioning alcoholics who have an open mind, and some do, for them to read this and say, wow, this is me. I see myself in this, and maybe I do have a problem. Maybe I should look at this a little more carefully.
Absolutely. And, you know, we are just getting close to running out of time here, Jeff, and I want to be sure we get the pertinent information out here for those that are listening, because you have a website, right?
I certainly do.
And it is?
It's the name of the book. It's anuncommondrunk.com.
Great. And people can go there, listeners can go there and buy the book. They can also, can they keep up with, I wanted to ask you early on, is this your first book?
It is my first book.
Okay, are you planning on writing more?
Well, I have some other interests. I am writing a book on the Pony Express Trail. My wife and I rode the Pony Express Trail several years ago.
Oh, what fun.
Actually writing an account of that with a history all woven in there. And then I've kind of started a second book on alcohol that I think will be a follow-up to this one.
Okay. Well, will people be able to keep up with what you're doing if they go to www.anuncommondrunk.com?
They certainly can. There's excerpts of the book. There's a table of contents. There are links to publishers where they can order the book. We also have a program, Gail, where you can buy the book anonymously for someone that you care about and have it sent to them with a little note that says, someone you love thinks that you might have a problem and wishes that you would do this.
Oh, what a powerful gift.
Yeah.
Folks listening out there, what a powerful gift. What a powerful gift. And, of course, that is part of this. People, anonymity is a foundation on which many 12-step programs are built. And it's crucial because people that are dealing with this are struggling with many things about themselves, not the least of which is shame and indignation, and yet the idea is for them to learn to forgive and to recover, and so the aura of anonymity surrounds these 12-step programs to provide that kind of an opportunity and an environment.
Right.
So don't be afraid, listeners. Don't be afraid. I want to encourage all of you to share this interview with someone you know. Jeff Herten, H-E-R-T-E-N, will have his own author's page on Inside Scoop Live and readreviews.com and Jeff's website, www.anuncommondrunk.com, will also have links to this interview. So I want to encourage everyone out there to take a look and take a listen and consider purchasing this book for yourself as you try to figure out how to cope in an environment similar to this, or how to maybe get out of an environment similar to this, as well as for someone you know that is struggling with these issues. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome, Gail. It was my pleasure.
Well, your book is a powerful, powerful first step for many. And just becoming aware of the myths, debunking the myths, getting a real grip on the realities and the real statistics, and changing your life. And audience, I want to thank you for tuning in to this segment of Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Gail Campbell. Until the next time, bye.